Coming up on Golf Today, Burns Baby Burns, a leaderboard inferno in Fort Worth, Texas, as names rise and fall and implode at Colonial, where Sam Burns outlasts everyone for his third win this season. And the year of Stephen Auker continues with a major title in Michigan at the KitchenAid Senior PGA. How did this underdog become top dog on the 50 and over set? And the week begins at the U.S. Women's Open, presented by ProMedica. Annika and Nelly, Lexi and Wheezy, Jin Young Ko and more get ready for the national championship at Pine Needles, giving thanks on Memorial Day. It's Golf Today.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
Golf Today on Memorial Day. Damon Hack alongside Eamon Lynch, Golf Week Magazine. Another big week in the game. You sit in this chair long enough, just wait. A big week's coming. A major championship is coming your way.
You don't have to wait too long these days, Damon. It's actually the fourth straight week we've had a major championship here. And the U.S. Women's Open's always been the most important of the majors in the women's game. It's the oldest, 77 years now this year. But it's also the richest. And I know it's kind of crass to talk about money when it comes to major championship golf, but there's a $10 million purse at stake at Pine Needles this week. That's huge.
Nice to see more equity in the game. We'll have some tee times from the U.S. Women's Open in just a little bit. It was a big Sunday, by the way, as well, in Fort Worth, Texas. Final round, Charles Schwab Challenge. Sam Burns, a winner for the fourth time in his career, third time this season, and coming back from seven shots. That ties Nick Price, who did the same thing in 1994. What a year 94 was for Nick Price, by the way. Six wins in two majors. So now you have three wins this season for Sam Burns, who caught up with Rex Hoggard after the tournament.
Thank you very much, Sam. I talked with you when you finished your round, waited around for 2 hours. If I'd asked you at the beginning of the day, what percentage would you have given yourself to win this tournament? What would you have given?
5%. I mean, I knew with how the conditions were going to be, if I could go out and post a really good number, I didn't really know what that number was, but I guess it was 9 or, 10. But yeah, I mean, just really tough conditions this afternoon and really on the weekend. So I'm really proud of the way that Travis and I battled out there.
Waited around for about 2 hours. What was going through your head, and when did you realize that, I might be in this?
Yeah, I think Travis and I were talking. It's just those holes on the back are so hard with the wind direction that we had. You just get a lot of crosswinds, and it's really hard to judge if it's a little in or a little help. I don't know what to say.
Going back to the putt in the playoff, you were shaking your head. What did you see, and what was your reaction?
Well, to be honest, I thought I left it short. I guess these greens got a little faster the last time I had a putt on this green. But, it's just, Scotty's one of my best friends out here, and for us to be able to have the opportunity to be in a playoff against each other, it was really fun. Great memories for me. He may feel different, but I love Scotty, and it was fun.
Great duel, a couple of 25-year-old American stars. So here's Sam Burns, the shifting odds from our friends at PointsBet. After putting out regulation for that 65, 4:48 p.m. Eastern, plus 1,100. So you're thinking, yeah, probably not going to be a victory, but then started that playoff a couple hours later, plus 100. Then after that birdie putt from off the green at 7:02 p.m. Eastern, minus 2,000. Quite a swing in the odds for Sam Burns. And how about this win? Kind of, from the hedges, from distance, from out of nowhere, seven shots back. That's just 2 weeks in a row we've seen this in professional golf.
And the bookmakers are giving Sam better odds than he gave himself. He just said to Rex that he would give himself a 5% chance at the outset of yesterday's round. And to me, it was just kind of a remarkable victory against a world number one. And in Scottie Scheffler's case, you can't really expect to win. He didn't make a single birdie on Sunday. There were only two other guys in the field, Max McGreevy and Brant Snedeker, who didn't make a birdie on Sunday, and they both finished outside of the top 50. But Sam Burns proved that there was a score there for the taking, no matter how tricky the conditions were. And at one point, we heard Jim Nance refer to how difficult the conditions were. He said you were watching highlights from the D flight of the club championship. There was so much kind of sideways action going on. But both Burns and Scheffler hit 7 of 14 fairways. Both of them hit 12 of 18 greens. But Scheffler had 32 putts. Sam Burns had 25. Burns gained more than four shots against the field with his putter. Scheffler lost almost two strokes to the field with his putter. That's kind of where the difference came.
Yeah, Sam Burns is 20th in strokes gained putting this season, 8th in strokes gained total. One of those players, modern player, 25 years of age, who does everything well. Bit of a low voltage, low wattage personality, but how much do you expect to see this player continue to be kind of a mainstay in contention? Someone who just missed out on the Ryder Cup last year, but will be a lock to make the President's Cup this year.
It's hard to imagine that he's ever going to become one of those kind of in-your-face, abrasive characters.
Sure.
It's clearly not in the guy. He lets his clubs do all the talking for him. And right now, this season, Scottie Scheffler's the only other guy whose clubs are talking louder than Sam Burns. This is three wins. And they're all kind of on tricky golf courses in their own way. Valspar is a particularly tricky golf course at Innisbrook. And this one, in a way, it's kind of set up for Sam Burns, this kind of golf course. There are only two par fives at Colonial Country Club. And he's ninth on tour in making birdies on par fours. So he's the kind of guy you would look to make some noise in a field like this. To me, the next step for Sam Burns is to start showing up in major championships. Yeah. He's made only 8 starts in his career in majors, and half of them have either been miscut or withdrawn. And the top 20 he had, the tie for 20th at Southern Hills last week, is actually the only top 20 finish he's had in major championships. Yeah. So to me, that's the next benchmark that he'll start to move through. But it's interesting when you look at the statistical weaknesses he had a couple of years ago, how much he's kind of isolated and eliminated those. The strokes gained approach, where he was outside the top 150 a couple of years ago, and he's now 11th on tour. And the strokes gained around the green, 64th, doesn't sound all that impressive, but it sounds a hell of a lot better than the 187th he was ranked in that category 2 years ago. It's hard. There aren't any standout parts of Sam Burns' game, but there aren't any obvious weaknesses left either.
I tell you, he's only played in 8 major championships in his career. I look at his resume in the majors much like a Victor Hovland, someone who also has proven to be a multi-time winner on the PGA Tour, but is a bit thin when it comes to major championship performance. That T20, as you mentioned, for Sam Burns, his best finish in a major, that happened at Southern Hills. How about Scottie Scheffler, though? The man he chased down, his good friend. I think this is almost the price of being great. That I'm not worried about Scottie Scheffler, even though he didn't make a birdie on Sunday, even though he had the 54-hole lead, and I'm sure he was disappointed he didn't get win number 5 this season. But to me, in some ways, this is the price of being in contention. Being so consistently good as he is outside of the miscut at Southern Hills tells me you're going to be getting top 5 finishes. You're going to get a runner-up finish. You're not going to win all of them. I still think, you know, Scottie Scheffler is right where he needs to be in terms of the big picture in this game.
Yeah, this is real evidence that there was no hangover at all from the miscut at Southern Hills. And he really wasn't that far off the cut line at Southern Hills. He double bogeyed the last hole to go home early. But this was a home game for Scottie Scheffler in Dallas. So you're going to have all of the attendant stuff that goes on around you in terms of family and friends and ticket requests, all of that. Coming off a missed cut in a major championship when he was the only major title holder so far in the game this year. To me, the fact that he put himself into the mix in those circumstances probably would look at this as one that got away. But the fact is, he didn't have anything close to his best stuff on Sunday, and he still made it to a playoff. So he's not doing an injustice to the world number one ranking.
Oh, absolutely. Chipped in on Saturday from off the green. You know, the gut check par saves on 15 and 17 on Sunday just to have a chance to try to birdie that 18th hole. Scottie Scheffler is right where he wants to be.
And doing all of that while he had a wedding to get to that evening as well.
Yeah.
That's real pressure right there.
More on that in just a little bit. We're back on Golf Today. In case you missed it, here's the LPGA news that you need to know. On Thursday, the 2014 U.S. Women's Open champ Michelle Wee West announced that she is preparing to step away from the LPGA. Wee West told Golf Week that she will play this week's major at Pine Needles, but only has the 2023 U.S. Women's Open at Pebble Beach on her upcoming schedule. Take a look at the tee time for Michelle Wee West. A trio of U.S. Women's Open champs. You got Brittany Lang and S.H. Park as well. Lang won in 2016, S.H. Park won in 2017. And then on Friday, world number 2 Nelly Korda announced that she will tee it up in this week's U.S. Women's Open at Pine Needles. This will be the 23-year-old's first start since the beginning of February. In March, Korda was diagnosed with a blood clot in her left arm, for which she had surgery. good to have her back on the LPGA. This is her first round grouping alongside Danielle Kang, who's a major championship winner in her own right, and the 19-year-old Ataya Titikun, winner on the LPGA earlier this season. With more on the LPGA Tour, let's welcome in our good buddy Ron Cyrak from Pine Needles. It's great to see you, pal. Wish I was sitting right there next to you in the media center. Let's start with Uni G. What did you make of this late career flourish yesterday?
You know, she's one of those players who is just always there. She's sort of hanging around. Nothing overwhelming about her game. I was at the 2009 U.S. Women's Open at Saucon Valley when she made a double bogey on number 10. She was in the mix with Christy Kerr. Looks like she was going to fade away. Birdies 13, birdies 14, then rolls in a 20-footer on 18 to win the U.S. Women's Open. By far the biggest win of her career.
Ron, there was a lot of chatter last week about having a match play tournament held the week before a stroke play major championship, and that might explain why the field perhaps wasn't as robust as it might be at another point on the schedule. Where do you fall on this idea of where this event in this format falls right before the US Open?
It's tough for any event to be the week before a major championship. No question about it. There's a lot of players who just like to take it off. I think the format change they've made for the match play, where they're in the pods and you play round robin, so you're not going to go there, play one match, and be out. I think that's going to make it more likely that more players will show up there. But the week before a major is always going to be a tough sell, particularly for the biggest name players.
Ron, no one's covered Annika Sorenstam closer than you have. What intrigues you the most about her at age 51, returning to the site of her 96 win?
Well, I was here 26 years ago, and all she did that week was hit 51 out of 56 fairways. It was just won by six strokes. I was there for the senior women's open last year. She won by eight strokes. And I'll tell you what, her iron play was as good as I'd ever seen it. Her distance control is phenomenal. She's not quite as long as she used to be, but I'll tell you what, I talked to her last week, and she's been working for this. She's been getting ready. And I'm going to be as fascinated to see what she does here as I was at Colonial in 2003 when she played the PGA Tour event, and I had no idea what was going to happen.
Well, someone else is coming back this week, Ron, that we haven't seen in a while, albeit not quite as long, as Nelly Korda, who's been out for the last 3 months. What are you expecting from her this week?
Yeah, you know, when you've been gone that long and then you return to competition, it's hard enough, let alone to return to a major, let alone to return to the U.S. Women's Open on Pine Needles, which is a very, very challenging golf course. And look, the U.S. Women's Open has not been good to Nelly in any case. She's played it seven times. Only once has she finished better than 39th, and she's missed the cut the last two times. So I think this is going to be getting her feet back in the mix this week, but it's hard to expect that she's going to be a big-name contender, but she could prove me wrong.
Well, another big name is Michelle Wee West. She won her national open at Pinehurst number 2, not too far from where you are right now. What do you make of this next chapter in her life?
Well, you know, it's interesting that she's making the announcement this week, because the two biggest wins in her career were, her biggest amateur win was a 2003 Women's Pub Links tournament. Her biggest professional win was the 2014 U.S. Women's Open at Pinehurst number 2. So the USGA events are near and dear to her heart. I remember talking to her in 2014 and her saying then that the thing in her life that she's most proud of is having a degree from Stanford University. And I think that always there has been a lot more to Michelle than just golf. And now she cares about being a mom. She cares about maybe having another career in maybe broadcasting, some other things. So she is somebody who's an enormously complicated person, an enormously evolved person. And I'm going to be fascinated to see what she does with this next stage of her life.
Let's switch to another kind of complicated, fascinating phenom here on Lexi Thompson. She played at Pine Needles as a 12-year-old. She had obviously a tremendous disappointment last year at the Olympic Club over those closing nine holes when she lost the U.S. Open. Where do you see her now, and what are you expecting from her this week at Pine Needles?
You know, I really think she's one of the players who was discombobulated among the most by the COVID pandemic. She had won at least one tournament for seven straight years. COVID disrupted 2020. She didn't win in 2020, didn't win in 2021, hasn't won this year, has gone 48 tournaments now without a win. But she's been playing well this year. Six starts, two second-place finishes, four top six finishes. This tournament has broken her heart two of the last 3 years. She was one stroke down at Country Club of Charleston in 2019 and then made two bogeys coming in and finished in second place. Then last year, she had a five-shot lead with eight holes to play, shoots 41 on the back nine, makes bogey with wedge in her hand on both 17 and 18, and still was only one stroke out of the playoff. I'm looking for her to do something special this week. I predicted a couple of weeks ago, talking with you guys, I thought she's going to have several wins this year. The first one might come this week here.
Ron, certain championships and venues just make sense. A U.S. Open at Pebble Beach, for example. How about this blending of a U.S. Women's Open at Pine Needles once again?
Well, look at who the three winners here have been. 1996, Annika Sörenstam. 2001, Kari Webb. They're both in the World Golf Hall of Fame. 2007, Christy Kerr, who's got 20 wins and two major championships. That's probably going to get her into the World Golf Hall of Fame someday. This course has identified really, really deserving winners, and I expect nothing less to happen this week. It's a hard second-shot golf course, man. These Donald Ross greens, you have small landing areas to hit to, and if you miss the green, those collection areas are really difficult to make up and downs from. It's going to be a shot-maker's event.
All get started on Thursday. Can't wait. Ron, thanks so much for joining us. Have a great week at Pine Needles.
Talk to you down the road, my friend.
Let's take a look at some of the tee times and the players you will see. About three major champs, in fact, three winners of the Chevron out at Mission Hills, grouped together, Lexi, Jennifer Kupcho, and the world number one, Jin Young Ko, 8:39 a.m. Eastern time. But Annika Sörenstam, yes, 10-time major champ, winner here in 96 with another U.S. Women's Open champ in Seoul Yu, and Ingrid Lindblad, the amateur from Sweden. How special she gets to be grouped with the legend from Sweden in Annika. And finally, these three young superstars, Rose Zhang, fresh off that individual NCAA title and team title with Stanford. Lucy Lee was 11 years old when she competed at Pinehurst number 2 back in 2014. And yes, Anna Davis, the amateur, winner of the Augusta National Women's Amateur. And coming up, Stephen Alker is a major champion at long last. We look at the amazing run he's been on since joining the PGA Tour champions. Hear why he never gave up the grind when Golf Today returns. It's been a career renaissance for Stephen Alker. This is the KitchenAid Senior PGA, aiming for his first career major. A little par putt on 18.
This for 63.
When we talked to him, and he talked about how important it was to stay sharp in his late 40s and felt that possibly something like this could happen, a career renaissance, more belief, more confidence. Spent Saturday night working on his driver, felt that it wasn't quite dialed in, ends up shooting a final round of 63 for a three-shot victory over Stephen Ames. You see Bernard Langer solo third, drove it into a couple of divots back-to-back on the par 5 10th hole, said it really stalled his momentum. He ended up making bogey on three of his next four holes. The winner, though, Stephen Alker, and what a rise it has been for this 50-year-old. You look at his career on the PGA Tour, 86 starts, not a single win, not a single top 10, made $841,000 across that PGA Tour career, but you look at what he's done on PGA Tour champions, 19 starts, now four victories, 16 top 10 finishes. Let's hear from the champ.
I had a great shot of you of off 18, looking at that trophy and looking through the names. What strikes you when you join names like that?
Well, the first one I saw was Arnold Palmer, actually. I'm not sure what year it was. I just saw, and then, you twist it and you see Lee Trevino. And then you see Jack Nicklaus and you see, Tom Watson. And it's pretty cool. I look back and I go, geez, did I have the game, or did I have the attitude? you know, certain courses suited me out there, but I couldn't really put my finger on it exactly. I think just right now I've just matured, and it's a second wind. I think that's the biggest thing. Like, I've had these kind of 18 months, 2 years to, okay, 50's coming up. You know, let's stay in shape. Let's keep playing. We've got a second career. Let's go for it. Let's go.
And because of when you had the lack of success on the tour, what made you decide to continue to stay with it?
I got no idea, to be honest. I must be mad. Probably my wife, just the support back home. You know, I had a young family, and it's kind of really all I knew. I could have gone back to New Zealand and started a business. You know, I would have liked to start something back then. I still would, actually. But I had options. My wife is English, could have stayed there and played the European tour, just kept going. That was a big decision for me, like 2018, I think it was. Like, okay, guys, we're going to go back to America. We're going to give another go. And that was a big decision.
Stephen Alker is here to stay. And I tell you, this seems like the story to me of the 50 and over set forever, whether it's, you know, a player like Alan Doyle or Jay Sigel or more recent vintage, you know, Scott Perrell, who didn't even play college golf. These players get that second chance, and a lot of them are able to really cash in those chips.
It really is a Cinderella story here with Stephen Alker. And you made mention, Damon, of a couple of places he's played. And it's amazing just how many cul-de-sacs he's disappeared into over the years, because he started on the Australian Tour, played the Asian Tour, the European Tour, the European Challenge Tour, the Canadian Tour, the PGA Tour. And now he actually won on the Corn Ferry Tour.
Yeah.
And now he's on the PGA Tour Champions. And he's finally found kind of the speed slot out there. And we saw that statistic, 19 starts out there, 16 top 10 finishes. And the major to me was an interesting one. The first major he played on the Champions Tour was a few weeks ago at the Regions Tradition. He finished tied third. It was a Steve Stricker runaway victory. The last time he actually played the weekend in a major championship was at Marion in 2013 at the US Open. So he was not on anyone's radar until he came out at the end of last summer on the PGA Tour Champions. And now he is, you could make a pretty compelling argument, the dominant player on that circuit.
It's interesting how the late 40s can sometimes be a bit of a danger zone, that players don't know what to do, how to spend their time. Is it Corn Ferry Tour? If they lose status on the PGA Tour, how do they stay sharp? How do they stay hungry? I love how honest he was about, you know what, maybe my game wasn't where I needed it to be when I was younger, or was my attitude right or not? But he said when he knew that he was sneaking up on 50, he needed to have a plan, and it was to stay sharp and competitive by competing with players half his age on the Corn Ferry Tour, in some cases players at the beginning of their career, not at the end of their career, as it were.
And having such a stop-start career over the years, perhaps there's a few less miles on the clock in terms of wear and tear with this guy, but the skill set has held up remarkably well. He's top 20 on driving distance on the Champions Tour. He's top 15 in accuracy. He's number one in greens in regulation, and he's 10th in putting. And what that adds up to is number one in birdies and number one in eagles.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy is just a complete package out there. And the one thing that hadn't been tested, at least in any kind of real public forum, is the space between the ears. How would the nerves hold up? And we saw at the weekend how the nerves hold up. I mean, you had a guy like Bernhard Langer, who was right in the mix there on Sunday, the greatest Champions Tour player in the history of the game. And Stephen Alker is the guy who goes out there and shoots 63 and wins by three.
Also a reminder of how important it is that these players on PGA Tour Championship. Look at this player. He is in fantastic shape physically. Vijay Singh, Bernhard Langer. A lot of the players who took that work ethic from the PGA Tour are taking it to the 50 and over set as well. You have to be in fantastic physical shape to compete with the best out there. And Stephen Alker is of that ilk.
Well, we're going to talk soon about some other guys who might actually be lucky to compete against Stephen Alker in the shape they're in now versus the shape he's in at the age of 50. It's always been the most important major in the women's game, and now it's the richest ever too. The 77th US Women's Open is at Pine Needles. Nelly is back, so is Annika, and Michelle Wee West is walking away. We'll talk all of the $10 million storylines. And the great Roger Maltby will be here to relive his win at Jack's Memorial Tournament and to explain those famously festive pants that he wore at the time. And oh, how we'd love to see some crybabies in the pro ranks play to this pin. Watch what happened at this girls' tournament with a whole location that was downright mean. Golf Today continues now.
And a good Memorial Day Monday to you. This is Golf Today. Damon Hack alongside Eamon Lynch of Golf Week magazine. We talked about it last week, last hour, I should say. Every week it seems like there is a big week in the game. Something important to talk about. Players vying for position on points lists. Players playing for history as well.
This is certainly a historic week, even before a ball gets in the air at Pine Needles, when the USGA's moved a lot closer to pay equity between the Men's Open and the Women's Open. How long it will actually take to get to that point, who knows, but a $10 million prize fund is a huge advance in women's golf right now. That's partnership with ProMedica. This is the first year that they're actually playing for a prize sum on this scale in a women's major championship, and it has floated other boats because we've seen other major championships in the months since this was announced back at the start of the year that suddenly move forward with their own kind of purse increases as well.
Love to see that growing equity in this game that we all love. Big week coming up in the women's game. As mentioned, Pine Needles Lodge and Golf Club gets set to host the 77th U.S. Women's Open. As you mentioned, presented by ProMedica. Yuka Saso is the defending champ. She won at the Olympic Club. Annika Sorenstam back at the site of her win in 1996. Michelle Wee West is in the field as well. Now, ProMedica, presenting partner, tell you what, they have increased that purse, as you mentioned, to $11 million, then $12 million over the next 5 years, so from $5.5 to $10 million. And yes, June 2nd through the 5th, Pine Needles Lodge Golf Club in Southern Pines, one of the great golf meccas of our country. Tell you what, man, there are a lot of great players and some storylines that we didn't expect to have and some ones that we're happy to have. What is the most intriguing storyline in your mind?
I'm a sentimentalist at heart.
Okay.
Here, Damon. I have a soft touch despite what you might think. To me, it's Annika Sorenstam. I mean, there's actually somebody in the field here this week who was 18 months old the last time Annika played a major championship. It's been 14 years since Annika walked away, and she could have walked away on a very clean finish. You remember that hole out at Interlaken on our last hole at the US Open? It's kind of like, you know, Ted Williams homering in his last at-bat. Great players seldom get to leave on a high. Annika left on a high like that, but then she entered the US Women's Senior Open at Brooklawn, not far from here, last summer, and she won by 8 shots. And I think got excited that her kids had finally seen her win in person. So it kind of lit the fire in her again. So we've seen her play a lot of these kind of pro celebrity events over the last few months, always in the celebrity division, which it's got to be intimidating if you're, you know, a Marty Fish or someone like that, and suddenly you see Annika Sorenstam in the celebrity division. But I think all of that is working towards what she's doing this week. She's not going to Pine Needles for some kind of sentimental trip down memory lane. She's going, first, not to embarrass herself.
Yeah.
That she's too prideful to do that. And secondly, because she probably thinks she can give a decent account of herself there. To me, she's 51 years old. It's a fascinating storyline to watch.
It really is. I remember watching her compete in Lake Tahoe last summer. Husband Mike was on the bag, and you mentioned the seriousness of her game. I mean, she was there with, you know, Charles Barkley's hanging out. You got Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce and all these big-time sports.
It was no hitting giggle for
it
Annika.
Was not. I mean, I said hi. Like, she kind of waved a little acknowledgement, but she was, you know, we're on that kind of hit-and-giggle par 3 17th hole. She was laser-focused. She's one of the greatest of all time, but also one of the greatest in terms of her pre-shot routine, how it's the same every single time. It's get the number. It's the play box after the think box. You know, you think about the shot you want to hit, and then you go ahead and you become an athlete. And I was watching this legend, you know, on the beautiful shores of Lake Tahoe, and it was all business. 100% agree. She's not out there to just kind of shake hands and smile and kiss babies.
But it is an embarrassment of riches in terms of the storylines that we have this week that go way beyond the fact that Annika's making a comeback. Yeah. Who are you looking at for your
For me, it's Nelly
star.
Korda. I just think about how robust her year was last year, how healthy it was. 5 wins, if you include the Olympic gold medal. She became number one in the world. She won her major championship at the KPMG with some of the best shots that we saw in 2021. And this young superstar, a picture of health, loses it for a time and has this blood clot, has to have surgery and step away from the game. We haven't seen her since February. She was such an asset to the game and giving us this incredible storyline of this rivalry with her and Jin Young Ko. And, of course, the sisterhood she has with Jessica and the siblinghood she has with brother Sebastian, who's making waves in the tennis game. And so to lose her in the first half of this season was a big loss for golf and for the LPGA. And you may say, and Ron said it earlier, well, you know, she's probably going to be a little bit rusty and not having the competitive reps. I tell you what, golf does funny things, and you get those sentimental stories, and you never know where your heart will lead you, even if your game's a little bit rusty. She loves the U.S. Women's Open and has talked about how this major championship is just a little bit different than the others. It's the national championship. It means a lot. I think it is the biggest major in the women's game. Would not surprise me at all if Nelly, despite not competing since February, comes out and has a very good week.
Yeah, we haven't seen Nelly in 3 months, and we haven't seen Nelly at her best in a little bit longer than that. She's 7 months removed from her last win last November, and the last few starts that she made before the blood clot issue came up weren't necessarily at her best. She'd had a couple of top five finishes, and then she just scraped into the top 20 in her last couple of events. That's not a bad finish, but it's testament to the bar Nelly Korda has set from what she did in 2021 of what the expectations are this year. I lean more towards Ron Cyrak's view on this, that it's a very hard tournament to show up and find your game in the U.S. Open, because it's a real vice grip, both of demanding shot making and pressure. Yeah. And it's a high-profile tournament to come back from a long layoff at as well. And all of that is going to be a factor with Nelly Korda. Having said that, we've seen more improbable winners.
Yeah.
Last year, Yuka Saso was a much more improbable winner than Nelly Korda would be this year. But she doesn't give the impression, based on what she has made public on social media, that she's had a great deal of time to work on trying to knock that rust off her game before she gets there, because it's going to be hard to find when you are there.
If anyone could do it, it's someone who grew up in that house with that championship pedigree that Nelly Korda did.
Who finishes higher, Annika or Nelly? Who finishes higher?
I'm going to say Nelly. You going to say Annika?
I'm going to go with you. I'll give you Nelly on that one.
Almost,
I'm not that ambitious.
I almost had a little points bet wager, perhaps, for later on in the week. I can't wait to watch Nelly Korda play the tee time alongside another major champ in Danielle Kang. Of course, she won the KPMG Women's PGA Championship as well. And Ataya Titikun, this 19-year-old superstar from Thailand. That's 2:24 p.m. Eastern time. Another group of superstars, three major champs that have won out in California at the Chevron, Lexi Thompson, Jennifer Kupcho, and the number one player, the Rolex number one, Jin Young Ko, and finally, the aforementioned 72-time LPGA winner, 10 majors, 3 U.S. Women's Opens, Annika Sorenstam, with So Young Yoo, a 2-time major champ, and Ingrid Lindblad, LSU product from Sweden. Get a treat to play alongside the legend from Sweden. And moving on to the PGA Tour, it's time now for Winning Moments, presented by Win Grips. Flashback, Sam Burns Valspar Championship earlier this season, playoff against Davis Riley. Birdie putt from just over 30 feet on the second hole of the playoff to defeat young Davis Riley. Gotta love the reaction, absolutely fired up. And it was a similar scene yesterday after finishing his round. Couple hours before the playoff, Burns, first playoff hole from off the green, rolls in that birdie putt against Scottie Scheffler, takes home that trophy, the plaid jacket, Firebird car. Absolute great season, 3 wins so far for young Sam Burns. All right, folks, here's a look at the Comcast Business Tour Top 10. And the reason this is so important, since 2009, every player who finished in the Comcast Business Tour Top 10 has made it to the Tour Championship at East Lake. And this year, the FedEx Cup champ will receive $18 million. I say it every week. Look at those guys smiling. Damon.
I'd smile, too, if that number was waiting at the end of the road, Damon.
My wife says I repeat myself a lot, saying jokes and stories. My kids say it also. So sometimes I bring it to TV as well. All right, folks, we're celebrating a special anniversary in golf today. Returns our pal Roger Maltby. Roger joins to remember his win at the Memorial 1976 and more on his stylish pants after the break. Back on Golf Today. This week, the PGA Tour heads to Dublin, Ohio, outside Columbus for the Memorial Tournament hosted by Jack Nicklaus. Always a strong field. Muirfield Village Golf Club, great shakes as well. Wonderful golf course. On that note, let's look back at this date in golf history. May 30th, 1976, our buddy Roger Maltby wins the first Memorial Tournament in a playoff for Hale Irwin. There's Jack Nicklaus, he's smiling, but he's not happy. He's happy for Roger, but you know Jack wanted to win his first ever Memorial, but Roger Maltby got it done, third of five wins on the PGA Tour. And take a look at the style, Golf World magazine. I mean, those are some pants, Eamon Lynch.
Eat your heart out, Ricky Fowler. I mean, this is what fashion icons looked like back in the day. It's time now for our past champions chat. Pleased to be joined by our friend and colleague, Roger Maltby. Roger, 46 years ago to the day, you have the memories. Do you still have the pants?
Was I really still wearing those pants?
Yes. Where are those pants, Roger? Where are they?
We burned them. my buddies gave me so much grief about wearing those pants that when I got home a couple of weeks after that tournament, we had a little get together and a few beverages, and we doused them in lighter fluid and away they went.
But there is a story behind the pants, right? They were bicentennial pants.
That's true. It was 1976, and it was our bicentennial year, and those were the red, white, and blue with some stars and stripes and stuff, and who knows what else in them, but yeah, I thought it would be a good idea to wear them. And, you know, it's kind of like looking at your high school yearbook picture. You know, you really go, did I really look like that with the bow tie and the, you know? So at any rate, it dates you, but they seem to be coming back to that stuff now.
Well, that was my point. I mean, these guys today, they're trying to look cool. They do their scripting and they put it on Instagram. But you guys were in the heart of the 1970s where disco and music and fashion, I mean, it was as important as the golf swing. I mean, how much time did you actually put into your outfits?
Well, you did. You know, we didn't wear the casual khakis, cotton pants and whatnot. I mean, a great many of us had our pants tailor-made, and certainly back in the disco era, you know, we had pants where you couldn't see the pockets. They were up in the kind of the waistband and skin tight and then kind of flared at the bottom, little bell bottom to them. And that was the style of the day. And I wish I could fit in them. What can I tell you?
Well, you certainly had the game to back it up as well, Roger. Back in 76, you beat Hale Irwin in a four-hole playoff. Now, in the third hole of the playoff, one of your shots hit an out-of-bounds stick and bounced onto the green. Is that the luckiest break you had in your career?
Incorrect. It hit a gallery rope stake by the green.
Yes.
And I thought it, I literally at the moment was afraid that I'd beaned somebody right in the forehead. And, you know, I was expecting an ambulance to come out or something as I was walking down there to the green. And as I got to the green, they said, no, it hit this galvanized piece of steel holding up the gallery ropes. Bounced onto the green about 20 feet. And so, you know, if you have any introspective side, and yes, it was certainly the luckiest bounce I ever got, and maybe that anybody will ever get. But when you get a bounce like that, and say you're 10 over par, who cares? Is it really lucky? But when you get one of those, when you really need it, when the time is right, when all those things come together, and you get that kind of bounce, yeah, it's unbelievable good fortune. So the gods were, golfing gods were looking down on me that day.
Well, Hale got one when he beat Jim Nelford at Pebble, correct?
That's
off the rocks. So, you know, if turnabout is fair play.
That's true. And the next week we were playing Wailea after Hale Irwin got that bounce off the rocks at 18 at Pebble. And I just looked at him and said, funny how a golf ball can bounce, isn't it, pal?
That's a great story. I want to ask you real quick about winning Jack's inaugural memorial, literally in his childhood backyard where he used to play and look for animals. It was his ode to Augusta. Like, what do you remember about the lead up to this first ever event?
Well, he had had a pro-am there the summer before, a Children's Hospital pro-am. And matter of fact, I was paired with Governor James Rhodes that day, the governor of Ohio. But I had a look at it a year in advance. And so when we came that week for the tournament, the first thing that really stuck out to you was all the parallels with Augusta. You know, all of the members and committees were in their club jackets and this and that. I mean, everything was green. The gallery rope stakes were green. The garbage bags were green. Everything was green. It was so similar in so many regards. Hospitality was first rate. And compared to what we dealt with on a weekly basis, it was certainly very special. And we knew that right from the start.
Naraja, your previous win on tour in 1975, the Pleasant Valley Classic, you famously left the winner's check in a bar after winning the tournament. I'm guessing you didn't make the same mistake at the Memorial a year later?
No, I didn't. You only get one of those, Eamon. I used it up.
Oh, too good. Roger, it's great to visit with you. U.S. Open's a couple of weeks away. We'll see you outside of Boston. And thanks for traveling memory lane with us today.
Can't wait for another U.S. Open, fellas. Great talking to you.